Welcome to the Full of Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording. It's 2:25 p.m. that is Central Time. Today is January 27th, and of course, being Friday, it's the big picture, long-term audio and video for the various different asset classes. And there's certainly a lot to think about. And I think having a global perspective is going to help a lot. But I thought I'd kick off with the agriculture futures fund, and I do stress that word futures because in order for a futures fund to go up, then either prices have to be rising in a pretty significant manner or you have to have a big backwardation. And we had a nice move on the upside between 2020 and the middle of 22, and then we had a good size pullback. And since then, prices have been going sideways, but they did pop on the upside in here this week. Now, let's just go back and think about that and get as much back history as we can get our hands on. And this fund started off in 2007, right ahead of a really significant pop on the upside, but then contracted all the way down from 2011 through to 2020. That helps to highlight just how much damage a big contango can have on a futures position, on a long-term rolled forward futures position. Then let's think about the LME Metals Index. And it has rebounded really quite impressively. And we're now coming back up into the region of the peaks that presided between 2007 and 2011. We had this very significant breakout in 2021, 22, big pullback, and subsequently found support in the region of the 1,000-day moving average. So I think this is really quite bullish action overall. Now it remains to be seen whether it is a trend like we saw in the period between 2006 and 8, where we had this huge run-up, and then subsequently we had a huge amount of volatility, and which it turned into a classic Type 3 top formation, or are we looking more at this kind of phenomenon where we got the big completion of a long-term base formation and then subsequently some consolidation, but then it gave way through to a multi-year bull market overall? I think a lot is going to hinge on what happens in China. And of course, China has opened up and the mainland market is closed all this week, but Hong Kong and the H Share Index opened on Thursday and has popped on the upside the last 2 days, so extending the rebound. And we know why, that China has abandoned the COVID zero policy. And then we can also start to think about what that means. Well, they've been locked up for nearly 3 years. And people, I think, are rightfully ticked off about the restrictions on personal mobility. And now that that process is over and the restrictions on travel and all those testing requirements are being relaxed in a very swift manner, then that's certainly helping to stoke interest in the kinds of things that Chinese consumers will be buying, and also what the Chinese economy will require in order to really stoke economic growth once more. And then, of course, we have the fact that the property market has rebounded from the lows over the course of the last few months, and now it's steadying in the region of that 6,000 level. There have been plenty of occasions over the last while where that the property market has been steadying from 6,000. There have been plenty of occasions too when it fell below it, but it's been a lengthy range for years now, and China definitely wants to try and support the property market once more. Now, it would be, I think, remiss not to question how effective that's going to be when prices are already this high. And aren't they storing up a problem, an even bigger problem for further out in the future? by relying on money printing and debt to fuel economic growth. All of that is absolutely true. But the reality is they're doing it anyway. And liquidity speaks in terms of asset prices. So even like if we think about Country Garden Holdings, where it was really accelerating lower all the way down through 21 and 22, then we had that big pop on the upside right in here in November. That just about coincided with the end of COVID zero. And we had a little bit of a range forming, and then it has started to appreciate again in here this week. So certainly Chinese property is getting the kind of assistance that it needs. And there is obviously then the potential that we're going to see more money getting printed. Now, you can also see that the renminbi, as a very controlled currency, has not traded at all over the last week. If we look at the offshore currency, then it was mildly weaker and steadying, or I guess the dollar steadying against it in the region of the 1,000-day moving average in here this week. So, what's happening in China is important because it's going to be beneficial for example, the luxury goods market. Now, we had LVMH come out today and say that their earnings in the third quarter were nothing to write home about, and that they didn't have as good a quarter as they might have expected. Nonetheless, the share has continued to extend on the upside because everyone has reached the same conclusion, which is that having really been out of the market for the last 3 years, Chinese consumers are primed for some revenge spending and doing exactly what everybody else did. And then we think about Hermès, it's at a new all-time high. And this was further confirmation of that instinct by investors to buy in the region of the 1,000-day moving average. It has been rock steady support for more than a decade. And we had another good example of that over the last 6 months. Then let's think about iron ore. Because if China is supporting the economy, if they are printing the money necessary to reignite the property sector, then that's going to be beneficial for infrastructure. So iron ore prices have steadied and they're still holding here around the $100 per metric ton level. Now that's well shy of the peaks that we had back in 2021, but these are still comparatively high prices. And we can just contrast the price today with where it was back in 2011 and 12, and the fact that it is still at a multiple of the lows where it was back in 2015 and 16. And that is beneficial for the major companies that are exporters. So, are the, excuse me, companies that are exporting into China. BHP Billiton has popped on the upside, coming up from 2,000 to 2,800 in the space of only about 3 months is a really impressive advance. And then we're right in the region of the all-time peaks. Now we do have a short-term overbought condition. It wouldn't be at all beyond the bounds possibility that we get some pause and consolidation. Then let's just think about the wider sector and look at the BlackRock World Mining Trust. And it's also rebounded in emphatic fashion and come almost all the way back up to test the peak from back in 2022. And we're still hovering here below the 800 P level. But then if we think about the FTSE 100, I think it's rather interesting that it's a very large cap and heavily focused resources healthcare index. And it's also in the region of the peaks from back in 2017 and 18. And this has been a really profoundly long range. Then it's worth considering that China is doing what they need to do to try and avert a really significant property crisis. So they're going to print as much money as is required. And that's going to stoke demand for just about every exporter into China. That's certainly beneficial for Australia. And the ASX is coming back up into the peaks from 21 and 22. It's also beneficial for countries like Indonesia, where they're exporting commodities. The Indonesian central bank has pretty much said that they're at the end of their interest rate hiking cycle. And what this also helps to highlight is that the inflation problem that everyone's aware of over the last couple of years has primarily been a US-European phenomenon. It hasn't been quite as profound in places like China or in a lot of the other emerging markets. And Brazil right now has got some of the largest positive real interest rates of any market. Now, the stock market is in negative territory in here today. But ultimately, Brazil is going to start cutting interest rates. And they have an overnight rate of over 13%, and inflation is less than 6%. So you're basically getting a carry of 7% in real terms. And when they do start to cut interest rates, that's going to ignite interest in the consumption sector. Now, the Brazilian real is strengthening. And on the back of that very large positive real interest rate. And of course, we have stronger commodity prices. So it would be natural to anticipate that the currency should appreciate into that kind of environment as a major commodity exporter. So China's liquidity is creating a wall of new, fresh money hitting the global markets and helping to support commodity prices overall. Of course, the one that we have not looked at yet is oil. And oil prices continue to hold in at the region of the upper side of this underlying trading range. Now they were in negative territory in here today, and this is still a downtrend overall. So we have support in the $80 area and the region of the 1,000-day moving average, but it has not yet broken the sequence of lower rally highs or pushed above that 200-day moving average. When we have a company like Chevron, and they announced yesterday that they're going to have a $75 billion share buyback, and that certainly was enthusiasm that pushed it up to a new high. And then they came out today with their earnings before the market open, and they said, well, we don't anticipate it lasting. So that was a bonanza in 2022. Now, the challenge, of course, is about demand. And we're likely to have an uptick in Chinese demand. And that could also feed through into emerging markets. And of course, that is where the primary source of demand growth originates. But then the next question is, if we're going to have commodity prices rallying, and if China is printing, and that helps to stoke global economic activity, well, then what's going to happen in terms of US interest rates? And I think we're going to have the answer, or at least a partial answer to that next week. So we're in an interesting position here where the 10-year yield is hovering around 3.5%. And the more back history we look at, the more it looks like the downtrend has been broken. So there's been a very, very clear downward bias. And we haven't ever seen it sustain a move above the 1,000-day moving average for as long as it has on this particular location. But in order to really confirm that we are back in a clear supply-dominated environment and that we're heading into more of an inflationary time, then the yield will have to come back towards the 1,000-day moving average, bounce, and then subsequently push up to new recovery highs. So we will need to see a higher reaction low. And we're quite away from that. So that's going to be sometime over the next 2 or even 3 years, we'll have confirmation that the bond bull market is in fact over. In the meantime, the Federal Reserve is going to announce what they're going to do about interest rates next week. So they're widely expected to raise by 25 basis points. And so they started off with 75. Now they're down to 50. They're going to go down to 25. And we've had a good size rebound on stock markets. And I think it's important to highlight the fact that despite the rebound we've seen on stocks, bonds have not been rallying this week. So we can simply just zoom in and look at it on a daily basis. The yield over the course of the last 10 trading sessions has gone nowhere. But the Nasdaq is putting in its best rebound since 2020 and is now pushing out to new recovery highs. So it is now, in fact, in the process of breaking its sequence of lower rally highs. And it's closing the week above the 200-day moving average. Now, the last time it did that was right back in August, and that was a wonderful shorting opportunity. And I can't be the only person who is thinking about it in those terms. Now, obviously, there's a huge amount of hype in the market around Chat GPT, and I really do think it is worth just remembering the fact that artificial intelligence hype has been one of the primary bullish characteristics of this market for at least the last decade. And let's not forget that back in 2016 and 17, it was enthusiasm about how imminent autonomous vehicles were going to be that helped to propel Tesla higher. And then, of course, they had to go off and build their factories. And then we had the pandemic. So we've had a really impressive rally. And it has now come all the way back to test the region of the 1,000-day moving average. And I won't be at all surprised if we get all the way up and test the $200 area, which would be a full double from the region of the low 4 weeks ago. But then the next big question is going to get asked. And it is, well, they don't really have autonomy. Now, I've spoken with a few friends of mine who have taken the underground loop in Las Vegas, and those are running autonomously. So Teslas can run autonomously in tunnels where there's no traffic, and all the other cars are Teslas too. Then they can run autonomously, and it's a lot of fun. And you only have to pay $4 and you can ride all day. So it does look increasingly likely that Las Vegas's sensational public transport over the next 10 years will be a series of tunnels underneath the entire city, but most particularly along the strip and connected to all of the casinos, which will stretch all the way out to the airport, and one will be able to take an autonomous Tesla underground through a lot of the city. Now, that's a lot of fun. And certainly it's going to make a lot of headlines for Tesla. But that's not a lot of cars. And the valuation is such that they need to sell a lot of vehicles. And now they're engaged in discounting. And this isn't the first time they've been discounting. And discounting educates consumers. So the consumers will quickly come to the conclusion that there is no need to spend and to pay sticker for a Tesla. All you have to do is wait for their sales to decline, and you'll get $7,000 or $8,000 off the price of the vehicle. And that's a recipe for super spiky trading activity. And it's already one of the most volatile stocks in the world. So we've had this really impressive rebound this week. This is, if this doesn't signal risk on for investors, Tesla doing this well is certainly an indication. And then we have the VIX index, which dropped down to a new reaction low in here today. The most important point, though, is that it has broken the sequence of higher reaction lows. So this is certainly supporting the view that we're moving into more of a risk-on environment. Then we have the MOVE index, which is the bond volatility, and that is now also breaking lower. So volatility in the bond markets is not nearly as elevated as it was. But it's important to highlight that in just the same way that spikes in volatility signal lows in the stock market, spikes in volatility in the in bond volatility also mark lows. That's why I've been much more enthused about buying bonds than equities over the course of the last few months, because bonds are way more oversold and have the yield to back up the potential for asset price appreciation. Now, then let's think about financial conditions. So, financial conditions are heavily influenced by what happens in the bond market and what happens in the equity markets. And if we look at this Goldman Sachs measure, it has dropped down to a new reaction low. It got up to test the peaks from 2020 and then also 2015 and 16, and now it's starting to come back down. And the shape of the chart looks virtually identical to the compression in high yield spreads. So, what I find very interesting right now is that where we have clear evidence of money being printed, liquidity increasing, is in China. And we're seeing the response to that in global markets. But liquidity in the US market is contracting. So we still have a heavily inverted yield curve. And we're in the stage two phase. So the stage one phase is the initial phase where you just get the inversion. Everybody flips out and they say there's going to be a recession. And we get a wobble in the stock market. And then the recession doesn't happen. And corporate profits don't decline as quickly. And investors then are more relieved than worried because the central bank is beginning to act against inflationary pressures that were worrying investors. So then asset prices recover, and that's exactly what's starting to happen now. But the longer the yield curve remains inverted, the more pressure it puts on liquidity metrics. And then subsequently, it's when the yield curve pops back up and through the zero bound is when you usually get the worst of the selling pressure. Now, when we look at the inversions we've had in the past, they can stay inverted for a year, like in 2000, or it can stay inverted and close to inverted for a year and a half, like we saw in 2005 through 2007. So the yield curve initially went inverted in March of last year, and we are approaching nearly a year now, or 10 months anyway. And we've also seen that the 10-year minus the 3-month has inverted exceptionally sharply, and it's still at negative 115 basis points, and that is about as inverted as it gets. And then if we think about the municipals, so I created this spread of the divergence between the 10-year and the 2-year on the muni spread, and it was inverted right at the end of last year, and we're still hovering here around 6 basis points. Then if we look at the high yield curve spread, it is trending downwards. So it's not inverted, and it's not as narrow as it was in 2020, but there's an undeniable downtrend here. So as we think about the rebound we're seeing on the stock market, it is pricing in the potential that there's going to be a soft landing. So we're seeing liquidity measures that are contracting. And we know that the month over, excuse, well, month over month and year over year money supply, and let me make sure I get the right chart up, is now negative. And this is the first time it's been negative. We got down towards zero in 1995, but it didn't go negative. So we have money literally being taken out of the US economy. They are literally taking money out of the market. Now, it's easy to make money in markets when there's lots of it about, and it's harder when there's less of it about. I think that's about the clearest tautology we have in financial markets. So we're seeing oversold rallies taking place right now. And we have this Fed meeting coming up on the 1st. So that is going to answer a question. And the big question is this the last interest rate hike, or will there be more? Maybe they're going to slow down and just go at a quarter of a point from now on. And I think that is why bond yields are not contracting further, and are instead hovering here around the 3% level. So ultimately, interest rates will start to come down, and we will start to see more pressure building in the economy. Now, I thought it was interesting today that American Express came through with earnings, and they were undeniably impressive, and the share rallied because their guidance was very clear. They said that the higher income bracket of people that have their platinum cards and higher are doing fine and have not curtailed their spending in any measurable way. So that has certainly helped to support the market. And then we've also seen that Visa, and I think let's just zoom in and look at that, because there was the fat finger event on the NYSE earlier on this week, and that contributed to huge volatility. And but today Visa popped on the upside, and that was in sympathy with the big advance that we had in American Express. Now, it's worth then thinking about Capital One. So they rallied in here this week, but for a different reason. They were being rewarded for the fact that they're boosting their loan loss provision by about 2 billion, and that they're trying to set money aside in anticipation of a more difficult trading environment in future. And markets were willing to support that. But more broadly, we're seeing the banking sector doing quite well, and US banks are right in the region of the upper side of this range that's been forming for the last 6 weeks. And because of loan loss provisions that were made in Europe ahead of the anticipated energy crisis? Well, because Europe's natural gas reserves are at the highest level for this time of the year in history, then the loan loss provisions within the banking sector haven't been drawn on. So the banking sector is extending this pop on the upside. And then UK banks are also extending their breakout. So certainly we're seeing more interest in Europe because the worst fears about the entire continent freezing to death this winter are not being brought to fruition. And that was the point that I'd been making all the way through the summer, that this enormous surge in prices was representative of this panic buying. I think it's also a really good example of how the trend changes the fundamentals, that it was this enormous amount of buying created the huge advance. And as soon as they stopped buying, well, that was because they had the inventory and they forestalled all of the panic. And then subsequently, prices have come straight back down. Now, they're steadying in here this week, but we're still at a fraction of where the peak value was back around $300. Now, when we think about the defense sector, it is right in the region of the peaks from back in 2019 and firming in here this week. And the more people from Russia that I talk to, the greater their conviction is, or the greater the sense of conviction is, that they think this war is going to last a long time. And I think the closest parallel we have is in the Iran-Iraq war. But the roles are sort of reversed, and the aggressor on that occasion was Saddam Hussein, and the reason that Iran was able to repel the invasion was because they literally threw bodies in the way of tanks. And they were willing to absorb huge casualties in order to break the resolve of the invaders. And that does appear to be the strategy that Russia is deploying, except on this occasion, it is that of the aggressor. And Putin appears to be willing to absorb huge casualties because he thinks that the advantage Russia has is in terms of people and armaments. And eventually, the NATO forces will run out of inventory. And when that happens, then he will face an unarmed opposition. But in order to get to that point, then it requires that he run down that NATO inventory, and that the cost of that is going to be in very high casualties. It also means that there's going to have to be a significant investment in supplementing the armed forces of NATO in Ukraine, and that is likely to represent a really significant rearming process. So Rheinmetall is right at the heart of that in Germany, and the share pushed on to a new recovery high in here this week. But the big question is, how fast can they increase supply in order to harvest the gains that looser defense budgets are providing? Then it's, I think, worth just considering that one of the reasons why the NHS was so well funded through the end of the Cold War is because defense spending was repurposed for healthcare. But now the UK is spending more on defense, and the cost of healthcare is increasing. So obviously, that then represents quite a significant challenge overall. But BAE Systems is also right here in the region of the peaks. So I think that we're in a very interesting situation for stock markets. The low in October was a very oversold condition, and we've had a good size rebound. And now everyone is willing to bet that we are back in a demand-dominated environment, and that the most likely scenario is there's going to be a soft landing. So a soft landing means that inflation comes down and unemployment does not go up. But of course, unemployment going up is obviously something that's going to be very heavily influenced by the credit worthiness of various companies. So the tech sector has been where the majority of firings have been, and companies like Amazon and Microsoft are firing 10,000 people. And there are stories going around about somebody at in the HR department of Google, who was in the process of interviewing somebody, getting a call and finding out that she'd been let go. So there's certainly a clear intention to cut costs within the wider technology sector, and then that is being translated into more enthusiasm about their profitability. So Google is back in the region of the $1,000, or excuse me, $100 area, and testing the region of the 200-day moving average. And at least we have some evidence here of support being found. But the big question is going to be about interest rates. And longer term, the weakness that has come through in the dollar, well, that does help to highlight the challenge that the USA has, that there is a huge amount of money that has to get paid back in terms of interest expense. There is the unfunded liabilities. And then there is this political quagmire about the size of the debt limits. But I think more particularly, the electioneering for the presidential election in 2024 has already begun, and a lot of focus is going to be on the reform of Social Security and potentially forcing people to work longer. And it does set up the potential for generation wars, where the interests of retirees bump right up against the reality that there are fewer people working to pay for those services. So that is contributing to a weaker dollar overall. And the pace of interest rate hikes outside the USA, particularly from the EU and the UK, is faster now than the Fed is doing. So that's putting downward pressure on the dollar. And because we have greater liquidity and a weaker, on a global basis, and a weaker dollar, that's helping to support the emerging markets. So we looked at China already, and this is the emerging markets ex-China, and it's also rebounding in here. Now, obviously, India is a very significant part of that, and we haven't really spoken about the wider geopolitical environment. The Nifty index was down this week, and it does look susceptible to additional consolidation. And not least because investors have been looking at it as more of a binary bet, that if they are invested in China, they're not going to have as heavy a weighting in India. But Japan and the Netherlands, they basically rode in behind the sanctions on China, and supported the USA in here this week. So we have the Philadelphia Semiconductors Index, which has popped on the upside and broken the sequence of lower rally highs. And that suggests that the lows probably are medium term in nature, and that we could be into a lengthy period of ranging. because the biggest consumer for chips is China. And if they're going to be selling fewer of them, well, then that's going to stoke domestic supply growth within China. Eventually, there'll be more competition. And there's a lot of money being spent on increasing supply globally. When that supply reaches market, then we're going to have a surfeit and lower prices. So I think it would be rash to expect that we're going to have a big move up and through the 4,000 level. But we could easily have a lengthy range where the amplitude, it could be 100% from trough to peak. And because the index pulled back by 50%, well, it's pretty obvious what that would look like. Then, of course, the big question is, will China prioritize the recovery in its domestic economy first? And are we going to go through a relatively benign period where they are not as aggressive on the global front? And will we have a more benign geopolitical environment, and they are not going to be as quite as vocally supportive of Russia? So I think there's the potential then that that could contribute to additional upside. But the longer term trend is that China wishes to be completely independent. They're talking about limiting exports of solar panels. And that's obviously an attempted retribution that they want to try and preserve their competitive advantage in manufacturing. The solar sector is pretty much range bound. One thing that I think is especially interesting is that China is now largely competitive in the production of motor vehicles, and the evolution of the electric vehicle has basically leveled the playing field because they don't have to compete in the development of engines. And China has moved up the value chain, and they're going to continue to move up the value chain. And certainly, when we think about the lack of access to semiconductors, it's mostly about slowing down China's ability to move up the value chain. But they're already exporting vehicles, and the numbers are into the hundreds of thousands already. And that's obviously a competitive disadvantage for Europe. And Europe is very keen to implement their extraterritorial enforcement of carbon emissions. They want to put a tax on anything that's carbon intensive to produce that's exported into the EU. And obviously, that is in direct response to the fact that China is exporting cars into the EU. And it's just a way of ensuring that additional taxes are levied on those imports to enhance the competitiveness of the European internal market. So they're going to ensure that the carbon credit prices remain high and that they could go even higher. Now, we are currently in a La Nina cycle, and this La Nina has lasted longer than anything in the last few decades, which has actually contributed to lower temperatures around the world. But we're also now transitioning into an El Nino, and El Ninos generally contribute to higher temperatures. So we can definitely anticipate that the talk around global warming and record global temperatures is going to be amplified over the next 18 months. And that is likely to contribute to a lot of interest in carbon credits. And the Global Carbon Strategy ETF, which isn't just European credits but has California credits as well, is also bouncing from the lower side of its range. And as I've said before, I think that these are akin to zero coupon government bonds because when prices go down, they reduce the supply. And there are clear government incentives to try and support these prices. So there's only so far that these carbon credits can fall before we start to see support mechanisms coming in to push the prices back up again. So as we think about the wider market here, I think that we have to be aware that liquidity conditions are tightening in the USA and the dollar is weakening. And the Federal Reserve is very keen to try and kill off inflation. But most particularly, they need to bring bond yields down to contain the cost of servicing the debt. And that means they have to get inflation under control. So I'm a little bit reluctant to buy the view that we're going to have a soft landing. I think that it is more likely that the Federal Reserve is going to over-tighten because they don't have a choice but to try and get inflation under control. Because without getting inflation under control, the debt issues become truly problematic. But in the short term, there is obviously clear potential for additional upside, and investors are willing to give the benefit of the doubt to the soft landing hypothesis. And we're definitely seeing more risk on in regard, or in response, I should say, to the liquidity that is coming out of China. And that is when we think about the flow of global liquidity, capital is global and mobile. So it is going to flow to where the most attractive assets are. Well, when we think then about where are those attractive assets, I think the lowest risk and the highest potential outcome is in the emerging markets, that you have lower valuations, you have less of an issue with inflation, and as liquidity conditions improve, then that will help to support the outperformance of emerging markets relative to developed markets. In the USA, we're definitely seeing more interest coming back into the highly levered portion of the market, and the ARK Innovation ETF has now posted a failed downside break and is back above the $40 area. It hasn't quite yet been able to push up through that 200-day moving average, but it could quite easily do that if we get good news from the Federal Reserve next week. I do, however, think, well, I'm not buying anything until I see what the Federal Reserve is going to say, because my fear is that this is a buy the rumor, sell the news event, that we're going to see prices rally into that meeting and then fall subsequently. Then we'll see whether the lows do in fact hold. And the fact that bond yields have not come back down, that even though stocks have rebounded, to me at least, that suggests that it is certainly time to be a little bit more cautious. And I think with that, I will leave you for the weekend, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.